I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Takiya Reed of Divide and Dissolve. The doom metal project's new release, Insatiable, is out April 18th via Bella Union. In this conversation, Reed discusses how she tends to feel music almost more than she hears it, how audience reactions differ in various locales, and the relationship between heavy music and communities of color. That's on Into Music, coming up now.
When did you kind of turn that moment and know that this kind of heavy music was going to be the form of expression that you were going to follow?
You know, it wasn't an intentional moment. It just happened. I was playing my guitar and that's just what was coming out. And when I feel like I'm really new to playing guitar because I've been playing saxophone for forever. So when I play saxophone, I know how to control what I'm composing. I can in my mind be like, I would like to play this type of vibe, and it's there immediately. But with guitar, I'm just not a very skilled guitar player, so whatever is coming out is like, it just feels very like raw and emotional and as if it's supposed to be happening. And that's how I've always felt about guitar. Like I never push it. It's just whatever is there, and then I keep it moving. And that's why I feel really drawn to heavy music, because every time I play something on the guitar, it just sounds really heavy. And I'm like, oh, I like that a lot. But it's just my energy with my guitar.
So there's that I think power that comes with a guitar at kind of high volume, and you're not really thinking about it as well. Was that also kind of part of it? Like, wow, this energy is just kind of engaging.
With the energy and the volume, for me, I thought it was a very good idea to integrate physicality in the music. And in order to do that, you require a low end and also volume. And just finding the perfect blend makes it feel psychologically loud. Even if you're like under 100 dBs, you can do a lot with that. You can make it feel really intense. And to me, I kind of love the theatrics of making music feel really loud. Like, oh my gosh, that was so loud. And I was like, sweet, we're at like 96 dBs. Like, I'm glad you felt that way, because that was a feeling. Like, you felt it through your whole body, and now it was like, whoa. And to me, that's an energy I love to like have throughout my music, because it's really impactful and it makes it more accessible. When you create music that you can feel in your body, you don't even need to listen to it with your ears. You can just feel it. And that is a very, very important thing that I like to integrate.
Yeah, it becomes this, let's say if you have four performers on stage, it's like this, I don't know, fifth presence maybe?
Definitely, I agree.
What about the compositions themselves? So if this is kind of, it seems like it's this pretty spontaneous kind of outpouring. How do you sort of shape the compositions, or don't you shape them?
I would say that I try really hard to just like make music feel good. I want to feel good, and I want people to feel good while experiencing it. And that feels really intentional. I'm like, okay, cool. Those are my intentions. Like, please let it feel good. And then the other ones, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, does that sound, oh my God, that sounds so evil. Okay, I'm doing good now. I enjoy scaring myself a little bit. I'm like, okay, I feel a little scared. I think I'm like, okay, I actually am accomplishing something I strive towards. I enjoy that feeling. I enjoy the discomfort and dissonance and playing with that, moving in and out of it and achieving comfort, like being like, oh, I'm gonna take us way up here. Now I'm going way down. And then it's like mellowing out. I enjoy the ride of music. And I'm very like just into my feelings, basically.
The thing that you said about scaring yourself is like, to me, it doesn't matter what genre it is. I mean, it can be a symphony, it can be synthesizer music, it can be Slayer, but to me, it's always best when it has that little bit of like, the hair on my arm raises, and I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be listening.
Yeah. No, that's a great feeling. That's a wonderful feeling. It's so important. I agree.
What do you think that is?
I want to say it's spiritual, but I also think it's chemical and physical, and I think it's a lot of things coming together all at the same time and just making a moment happen. There's something that's so unique that music can do. Everyone who can be in a room together and not speak the same language and not grow up in the same place, but all have the same exact feeling of despair or happiness or their hairs raising on their arms. Like, there's something that is so special about music and art, where a whole entire feeling and a vibe can be felt. And to me, that feels like it surpasses the physical realm, but it's all integrated. And what you're talking about is what makes music special. There's so much music that we are just like inundated with. You walk into a store, you hear music, you're in an elevator, you hear music. You're in the lobby somewhere, you hear music. And some music is not even meant to be heard. It's just meant to be experienced so that it interacts with your nervous system in a way. You're in the grocery store, they want you to shop and buy things. There's certain music played to make people engage in capitalism in a way. But then there's some music that is just meant to make you have every single emotion that you could possibly have. And that music is unique. And it's not formulaic. And it's just like, it's the way the notes land in your ears. Like, you know, like for example, like on this interview, stating it right now, but like Roberta Flack has just died. 88 years old. I mean, she is just a legend. Like, she's iconic. Her voice is angelic. And she just says the words, "The first time ever I saw your face." And like, everything drops. It was just the most simple line. Yet, like, your soul is just like ripped from your whole entire body. Like the like how measured she was in her performance, her execution of her art. It's just incredible what music can do to us. So it's very powerful.
What you're saying too about her, just the first utterance in that song specifically, once you've heard it, then you always have that as your part of your vocabulary, so that if you sing it to another person or you reference it somehow, everybody knows what that means and they know that emotion that comes with it.
You can't separate yourself from the emotion of the song. We can just say the words and you're just like transported to this moment in your body. It's like a point in time is referenced, perhaps when you first heard the song, when someone played the song for you, when you felt that way about somebody. or were longing to feel that way about someone, or the first time you were like, you listened to that song and you felt that way about someone, and having listened to it and not ever having felt that emotion before, it's just music is so powerful. And I guess sometimes you can't even help what you make, it's just there.
So often, like the music that I love the most is often made by people who, I suppose, in some ways, they have things that people would sort of look at as deficits. Oh, their timing's weird, or their pitch is off, or something. But it's so uniquely them, and it's so uniquely not something we've heard before that we just can't help but love it,
Definitely.
Like when you, it's like when you encounter somebody, and I'm sure you've done this, you encounter somebody who's got this laugh that 90% of the world would just be like, would you not?
Yeah.
You're just like, oh my God.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I just met a really special person.
Yeah. Well, tell me too about this, and I think you said something specifically about this in the press materials too, about this lack of words that. The expression going beyond, the vocabulary of the spoken language. Because I mean, you're using vocals, right? But it's not, there's not a narrative necessarily or anything there. It's another level of musical expression.
Yeah, I just wanted to continue to touch on the fact that we can have experiences without words. We can feel things together and we can be like, oh wow, that was really great, or oh my gosh, I'm changed forever. That was not good. Like, it feels, yeah, it's there's just this feeling. It feels very like there's feelings like this that are around all the time, and being able to tap into them is very important and unique. And I just feel like my music, most of it doesn't have words. But then when people write about it, they're all saying the same thing. They're saying what I felt, things, personal things that I've only thought. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what the song is about. And I'm like, okay, that feels cool that you were able to like go deep into my consciousness and understand this feeling that I'm trying to communicate, because I haven't spoken this to anyone before, but like there's something to it. Communication is very powerful and it's intelligent and it's mostly nonverbal, and instrumental music really interacts with that environment in a way that feels really honest. It's like, here's this music. What are your feelings towards it? Oh, okay, I was feeling something similar, or wow, same exact feeling. Or okay, we actually just have different feelings, but mostly everyone else thinks this. So that's something I would just always appreciate about instrumental music, like the power to access deep feelings within yourself. And it's important.
It stirs the imagination, right? Because I don't know, when I listen to your music, I'm having visualizations. Some of them are, I don't know, probably memories, or some of them are some sort of projection of hope or fear or something like that. And then I also, I suppose, have that response that I do with a lot of art, which is like, I want to respond to this in my own way, whether it's writing words or I suppose some people would dance or paint or something.
And then there's the other thing, which is like, oh yeah, when I was writing this music, I had feelings of hope and fear, and we get to share in something together. And that's so important and cool, and something only art can do. I'm like, oh, cool. This is awesome. In a way that's like super pleasant.
So what happens in the live setting where it's not like you and I are now, where I'm just sharing, like I listen to this in isolation, but it is that communal space, and there's however many people, you kind of feed off of what they seem to be experiencing.
In a live performance, we're experiencing difference. You're at home, you're listening through your speakers. The music is two-dimensional. The sound waves are literally in a different shape and form. When you're at a show, when you're at my show, air is being blown from the stage because the music is coming from my amps and these speakers. And you're just immersed in the physicality of the music. And of course, I'm not a quiet band at all, but like my goal is to like drench the room in all the love I have in my heart and do a really good job performing my music. And I don't get to do that on the recording. We don't get to be together. I also get a chance to just play the songs however they're played. And who knows what's gonna happen. I live loop my saxophone. So it would be my intention to be as close as possible to the record, but like I have no clue what's going to happen. That's what's so vulnerable and cool about live looping. And for me, yeah, I feel very, very, very reactive to the audience. Sometimes things need to change for different people. Everyone's so different, and every audience is so different. I feel like you can just feel people. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to like this song. You all need more of this. So you can have it. Or, yes, you certainly need less of that one. That's over right now. And that's something I appreciate about being able to play my instruments and be in an immersive sound environment where things can change, where we have to be able to accept the reality of the situation. In certain realities, some things are appropriate and some things are not. And that would facilitate certain changes that are made. I think some people are not amenable to change, but I am. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna turn this down, or oh, I'm gonna turn this up. This was appropriate last night, but not tonight. So, yeah, those are things that, I mean, so many things run through my head. And yeah, sometimes, you meet someone in the audience and you're like, okay, cool. Like, I've met so many people, and I'm like, oh yeah. And then I see that person, and that person's like told me their story. And I'm like, oh, I'm definitely like influenced by this experience in this moment. So that's how I feel.
Yeah, audiences are so strange because sometimes it can feel like they're not receiving it. It's just like he's got a pulse, and then you find out that lack of reaction just is maybe that they were so immersed and mesmerized that they didn't know. Whereas you can also have people who are super reactive, but you ask them 10 minutes later what actually happened, and they just
Yeah, well, I play music all around the world, and there's different cultures for listening and experiencing. People think it's sometimes polite to have no reaction, and you're right. You're like, okay, no one had any reaction at all. I'm not sure what just happened. But then you find out afterwards, like, so much happened, and that's just something to contend with.
I want to close out, and this is a little bit of a different question, but it's actually something that I've been thinking about lately because I've seen this increase. I think it's largely North American, but this increase of especially indigenous people participating in heavy music and black metal in particular, and this music that we have, I think, in a lot of ways traditionally associated with things such as white supremacy and European heritage and so forth. And it's fascinating for me to see that being adopted and adapted and reimagined in this current climate. I wonder if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I'm really into ethnomusicology. And when you go to the beginning of something, It usually is not a white supremacist beginning. Like rock and roll, country, blues, soul, funk music all were created by Black people. So that's like basically all music. And that is the beginning was not overtaken by white supremacists. It's the set of conditions in which this music was created and how it was stolen and who decided to steal it and get credit for it and to capitalize off of it. And then when that music is taken back from the people who were violent in that realm, then you have like all these amazing bands that are full of like Black and Indigenous people creating things that sound incredible despite the violent environment that this music has to exist within. So I just feel a sense of patience around it because it's really important to create spaciousness in these environments. I don't normally see people who are like me. I'm Black and Cherokee and I play heavy metal music. It's weird. When I walk into the venue, everyone's like, excuse me. Like it's weird. It's a weird experience. And one day it won't be so weird, but it is very strange. And I'm excited for that to change. It needs to change. But that process is moving slowly, but there's still movement. And that's like where the hope comes from. And yeah, also too, I just like made my first symphony and I'm like, yeah, I am the composer. That's also really weird. I just don't really see many composers that look like me as well. And that's unfortunate, but we exist. And it's just important to always be an acknowledgement and to like always give like Black and Native bands opportunities that are so freely given to other bands that are so hard to come by. It takes forever in a way that it seems to not take like other bands. Yeah, there's like a different pathway and a different timeline. Time moves so differently. Yeah, it's so strange to be able like to be navigating all these things while also trying to make music. And yeah, it's just someone's decision. Someone's sitting there on their chair being like, I'm gonna allow your music to get playlisted and get millions of plays or not. You know, like, and the people who allow the things to happen are not letting many bands like mine go through those doors. There's so many different obstacles. And you can decide as like a Black and Native person to like give up or to continue. And continuing is a very challenging path at times. I am not going to be stopped though. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep making my music.
You've been listening to a conversation with Takiya Reed of Divide and Dissolve. The latest Divide and Dissolve album, Insatiable, is out April 18th via Bella Union. You can learn more about the band at divideanddissolve.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on KMUW by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next time.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.